Some days in uniform, the danger that we face is not overseas. Sometimes it's right down the hall, behind somebody else's rank, hiding in paperwork, meetings, and various threats that make you second guess your own reality serving in the military. When you speak up, you expect that the military, the system there, will protect you. Then somehow the system starts protecting itself, and you're left carrying the weight, the fear, and the constant pressure to stay professional while your life gets rearranged. Now, picture the opposite, a path where you keep your head clear, you keep your eyes open, stop letting other people bait you into reactions that can get you written up, a path where you build a paper trail and find a place to reset your nervous system and make decisions that protect your future, even if the organization refuses to. Chelsea Woodard, our guest today, lived this shift from feeling supported to being boxed in by politics, retaliation, and career games after reporting a sexual assault. She walks through what helped her survive it, documenting everything, sending follow-up emails, using her leave, leaning on the vet center off base, and knowing when to bring in an attorney. This conversation is for anyone who's ever felt targeted, dismissed, or watched while trying to do the right thing. Before we get into this episode, though, I want to take a moment to raise awareness for something that's deeply important to our community, the Global War on Terrorism Memorial Foundation. This organization is working to build a permanent national memorial in Washington, D.C. to honor the service members, families, and civilians impacted by the Global War on Terrorism. This memorial will be both a tribute to those who have served and a way to ensure that their sacrifices are recognized and remembered for generations to come. If you'd like to learn more or find out how you can support their mission, visit GWATMemorialFoundation.org. Now let's get into today's episode. Hey, Chelsea, welcome to the show. Really glad to have you here.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here and excited to share my story and testimony, and I hope we can reach some folks and help heal the nation, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of like we were talking before we started recording here a little bit about the show, and, you know, that's what it's all about, just getting out there, getting messages out there of other folks who've maybe been through difficult situations and how they got through it, and or you know, other organizations that have helped people get through things. And so we talk about all those things really to give hope to folks, and that's what we're trying to do with the listeners here today, is give some hope, give some encouragement. And before we dive into to everything here, can you just give us a little bit of background for the listeners who aren't familiar with you, and so they can know a little bit about who you are, kind of your background in the military and that type of thing?
Absolutely. So my name is Chelsea Woodard. I've served almost nine years in the military. I served U.S. Air Force. Initially, I was not going to join the Air Force. I wasn't going to join the military at all. Funny enough, my brother was in ROTC, and I thought he was going to be the one to go. But I had a family friend who persisted. He was like, get out of here, you know, from Miami. He was like, you know, go to the Army, is what he said. And he was like, do 4 years, and then all this stuff is going to be here. And he's like, but you're smart. You should try the Air Force. And I went to the Air Force. Literally, I went to the Air Force. I wanted to be a linguist, funny enough. And they were trying to ship me out. It was around the time when they had those bonuses for positions that were critically manned and needed to be filled. So they said, we got this ammo thing. And I thought it was like security forces ammo, where they do the armory with the guns. Boy, was I wrong. So, and he said, if you don't like it, you can just change it when you go in. And when I went in and I tried to change it, they just laughed. It was like, no, girl, you can't change it. You're ammo. This is what it is. So I started off as trailer maintenance, working on trailers. I used to say I was a Jiffy Lube for the Air Force, right? And then I graduated into doing munitions inspection and things like that, missile maintenance and all of that jazz. So I don't really tell. When people ask me, I just say, you know, I just worked on ammunition. You know, if you say bombs and missiles, then they go left. You know, do I have to be worried about you? And I'm like, please don't start. You know, like, don't start. You know, I'm friendly here. But it was really good for the first 4 years. And then the last four and a half, you know, it wasn't so good. And that's what I'm here to talk about, and how to help people navigate through it. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, well, so let's talk about the kind of back half of your time in the military. You said it wasn't so good. Tell us a little bit about that experience and kind of what was going on with you there and how that all kind of worked out.
So unfortunately for me, I had one of those lovely experiences like most women. And I thought reporting it and with all the research and things that they said in the military about how far we've come with sexual assault and supporting women and the SHARP program, I thought that it would be a good idea to report it. Listen, I was terribly wrong. Everything just went down here from there. I underestimated a lot of things as far as politics, bureaucracy in the military. And if me stepping forward is going to alter someone else's career that's been in for 19, 18, 21 years, they don't care what I have to say, you know? And that's the unfortunate reality. And that's a lot of what I experienced. I experienced a lot of people initially saying, hey, we support you. That's what our program is here for. But when they saw how knee deep it was and when it came down to supporting me or their positions, it was, we can't support you. You know, I've had people resign because they didn't want to face accountability. I have a report from the IG, whereas I was put next to the person who assaulted me. And because I took the offer to, expedite transfer. So that's when they give you, for the people that don't know, that's when the military gives you the option to leave the base that you're at and go somewhere else for mental health reasons, for whatever reason, right? And they call it an expedited transfer. So because I took that expedited transfer, the IG concluded that they weren't going to do anything to the official, high-ranking official, who put me next to the person who assaulted me on purpose, out of spite, right? In my opinion, that was definitely out of spite. And they said because she left the base, I had went to another base, that they didn't find any reason to take any action against that person. So I was like, well, so much for accountability. Even though that person was still telling other individuals to give me paperwork, and you're not supposed to do that. So after that, I reported it to Congress. And from there, they didn't like that I reported them to Congress. They put in my medical records. She reported us to EO, IG, which is retaliation. And from there, it just went bad because I'm one of those people where I stand up for people and I don't believe in, I wouldn't say titles, but I'm not going to hold your position above what is morally right. And if you know that you're wrong, if you know that you're just kicking somebody out for a promotion, to me, that's wrong. You know, like we have so many service members. I remember when I was back at Nellis, we had a service member commit suicide on base, broad daylight, full shift. And I never understood why. I was like, there's so many people around you. Wouldn't you just go to somebody? But after what I experienced, I totally get it. I totally get it. And you can go as many people as you want, but when it comes down to them choosing to stand up for you or their position, you won't find a lot of people that will support you. And that's the unfortunate reality of what I faced and still face today.
So yeah, and that's all unfortunate how that happened to you. And unfortunately, I've heard other stories from other women who have had similar experiences where they didn't feel like they were being not taken seriously, or they were just kind of brushed aside, and they weren't, you know, for whatever reason, they just weren't treated with fairness and respect. So for any of the listeners out there who are hearing your story and feel like maybe they have experienced something similar, what would you suggest to them that they do facing a similar situation where they feel like they're doing all the right things or doing all the things that they've been told to do, but really doesn't seem like it's gaining any momentum. It's not going where they think it should be going. What advice after going through all of this yourself, what advice would you give to some of those folks?
I would give to them the same advice that somebody gave me early on, which was don't let them get to your mind. Now I'm going to be so, I knew what he meant, but and he said it early, very, very early. And it caught me in enough time to where I was able to recognize, oh, you're just trying to gaslight me. You're just trying to get a reaction out of me. You want me to act this way so that you can document it and say, oh, look, I'm doing this because she's behaving like this. So I would encourage anybody who's going through the same thing, document, because I thought it was a joke. I was like, I'm not, this is excessive. that documentation saved me a lot of times. A lot of times. Even if it's just like you have this conversation in this meeting, send that follow-up email. This is what we talked about. This is what we agreed to. Send it. Send it. There were times where I was criticized. Like, oh, she's typing all this up and she's sending it to us. Yeah, I'm keeping an accurate record of what was conversated. And if you don't respond back, then you must be agreeing that this is what was said. So just don't let them get to your mind. Document and find your safe haven. My safe haven was this. It's just the beach. Water. Anywhere that there's water. Anywhere I can sit and meditate and be next to the water and listen to the waves. Find somewhere where you can clear your mind, clear your head. Mm-hmm. You'll have family that will support you. You'll have family that won't support you. You'll have friends that will support, won't support. In my situation, I saw a lot of I would have support. And then because certain individuals would go out and ask people questions, right? They would switch their status and be like, oh, well, maybe she is doing this. Maybe. And then that's what you call like bearing false witness to certain things, right? Yeah. I have it in my case, whereas I was reporting being followed and watched. I was reporting my supervisor verbatim stated to me they told her to watch me. And anything I do reported back to them that I couldn't be trusted. And when she said, well, why can't she be trusted? They said, oh, you just have to watch her. So it's like, you don't even have a reason. But that's what they do when they want to put you out the door. So I had to find the strength. I did a lot of praying. I did a lot of crying. I can't believe this is happening to me, because the earlier 4 years were amazing. I didn't have any trouble, nothing. And the idea was, we can't kick somebody out that doesn't have a history. So we have to create it, right? And then, so when somebody else looks at it, they'll say, okay, this person is a problem. Get rid of them. So, excuse me, I had to come to the terms, whereas there was nothing I could do that was going to change somebody else's mind, whether they were going to kick me out or not. And regardless of what they were saying to me, because they were like, we're going to cross-train you. We're going to, you know, we're going to help you in your career. But I'm getting paperwork left and right. That paperwork isn't going to help me cross-train. You know, it's going to help push me out the door.
Right.
So I had to come to that innate understanding. This is what it is, regardless of what they're saying. Document. I might not like it, because I was like, I'm gonna do 20 years. I'm gonna retire as a brigadier general. Out the window, right? So I had to come to that reality, like, hey, I know this may not have been what you wanted, but this is where we are. Protect yourself, get an attorney, and let it take its course. So I would encourage anybody to do the same exact thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think documentation is huge. And that goes for any number of things that you may experience in the military, you know, for the stuff that you're just talking about, of course, but also like any medical issue that you might have in the military as well. Document everything. Document copies of everything. You know, just keep a copy, keep your own personal record in multiple formats, if you can, hard copy on paper, keep it, you know, scan it in as on the computer, you know, all the different formats that you can have. Cause I don't know, like I've moved several times. I might've misplaced certain things and you end up losing stuff just because you know, it just gets swept up with what you think is trash, but it's not, you know?
And for the people that are like not used to it, you're going to be like, this is so foreign. Listen, it's going to be foreign, but you're going to be so glad you did it in the end. We had a senior master sergeant getting ready to retire. He had did 20 something years. Him and his wife was getting ready to retire, right? They lost his paperwork out of nowhere. And they had it set to where 2015 when he was a tech sergeant. And I was like, how did they just lose your paperwork? So it happens. It happens.
Yeah. And you never know the reason why the paperwork gets misplaced or lost, but quite frankly, it doesn't matter. If you have a copy of it, then you have a copy and you're good to go. And it doesn't matter. Don't trust somebody else with your information to make sure that, because They're not going to care as much as you're going to care that that documentation exists, especially when it comes to, you know, disability benefits and all these other things that that might take place, even legal issues like you're talking about. Like, nobody else is going to care as much as you do. So you damn well better keep it, you know, and that's exactly what you're saying. So were there any resources or, you know, organizations or anything like that that you reached out to for help during this time that you were looking for, you know, assistance maybe? I know you said, you know, get a lawyer, get, you know, those types of things, but were there any organizations that were helpful for you?
Well, for me, initially, I'm going to say it was like the Sapper, because my stuff started in Korea, then it came to Florida. It was the Sapper. I would go, and then it was like People, other MCOs that I would lean on a lot. It was like Airmen and Family Readiness whenever I like needed a loan or whenever I needed to get like a budget, because they'll do like a budget with you and things like that. Whenever I felt off track, I would initiate some of these programs. There's one more. I can't think about it right now. It'll come to me later. But okay. It's one of the chaplain is another one. Like, there'd be different times where I would go and utilize the service. Mental health was another one, but they would always get to this point whereas they would say, hold up, we're Air Force. We got to protect Air Force versus protecting Chelsea. So unfortunately, there was a lot. Oh, the Vet Center. That's what it was. Vet Center is off base. They do not have that obligation. It was solely created because so many people, so many veterans, I believe it was from World War II, they were committing suicide and things like that. And they said, we need something separate from the military where service members do not have to report and they can come here confidently and they can get their care. And that's exactly what I did. I loved it. Both times that I went, when I moved, I went to two different centers. I loved it. You will have to turn in your records because that's like a part of the military. They need to, if you're active duty, they need to have the accurate, what do you call it? It's a term that they say, not duty history, but fit for duty. They need to determine if you're fit for duty. So they'll say, like, we need your records, but that's only if they need to determine if you're fit for duty and they need to put you out. So you would be the main person for the people that's listening. You would be the person, if you say, I can't do this anymore, your therapist is going to say, are you sure? You need to report to the main base is mental health, get that process started, and then when they ask for your records, we'll present your records and say this, which the person, I'm saying she, because I'm a she, but she or he, they'll say, this is what she's been working on with us. We concur with this. You all have to make your determination. And then they'll go from there. But I found the Vet Center very helpful. I had, like, paint therapy, you know, and that was pretty fun. And as long as you tell your supervisor, they should be okay with it, letting you go do those different kind of therapy exercises. And it was pretty good. So, and they have other veterans come that are like retired or just out of service, and you just get to mingle with a bunch of different people. And the beauty of it is like you get to see that life still goes on after service. So that was key for me.
That is good. Yeah. And at what point did you recognize in yourself that you needed a little bit more outside help than what you're able to kind of handle on your own when you decided to go to the Vet Center, to go to some of these other resources? At what point were you like, you know, I need to kind of just reach out and get some extra help?
It got to the point where, like, I wouldn't say that I didn't recognize myself, but I was like, what's going on here? You know, like, you know that SpongeBob meme where he's like, well, I kind of felt like that because I would talk to my supervisor or peers that were in service and they would say one thing. Oh, they just want to help you. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But then when I would tell people that were outside of service that had been through what I've gone through, they say, no, 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 no. That's not what's going on. This is what they're trying to do. You need to protect yourself. And I'm like, but they're telling me this, you know. And I was still in that phase of uncertainty where I wanted to believe that the actions that were being taken were in favor of me. But in actuality, they were doing it to hurt me. So when it got to that point where I was like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I'm not going to show up and give 100% and everything that you're doing is to harm me. For example, I had a supervisor tell me, and this was like my breaking point. I had a supervisor tell me, he gave me like an order to go do this workload. And when I went to do the workload, I was like, this isn't according to the TO, which is like the technical order, how it's supposed to be done. And when I came back in, essentially, they were fully ready to give me paperwork for doing it how he said to do it. But I didn't do it because I was like, no. And I showed him like, hey, look, this box is exactly like what I thought it should be. You told me to do it this way. And he couldn't provide to me in a TO because I said, where does it say to do it your way? If you show me, I'll do it. He couldn't show me. And I was like, oh, you guys were going to try to write me up for this, huh? Oh, I see what's going on. And at that point, I said, no more. No more. I got an LOR for going over doing a fitness exam because the master, he didn't know that I was going overdue. And I was like, are you sure? Because you emailed me to make sure that I fill out this paperwork to send back to the first sergeant and the fitness person in the unit because I was going to go overdue. You came to make sure I did it and sent it back to them. You're CC'd on all the emails, even where they responded saying I was going to be overdue. So why am I getting this paperwork again? So when it got to that point, I said, all right, I'm going to need a little help coming to reality that what I thought the service was and what I thought of how situations get handled and how people get treated, you know, per the AFIs, this isn't, it's not panning out that way. And I've never dealt with this experience. So I'm going to need a little bit more help. And it took a lot of putting pride aside, putting ego aside, and really saying, like, I'm going to have to figure out what I'm going to do after the military, you know, and coming to terms with that reality. And that's when, yeah, I was like, okay, let me go talk to some people outside of the uniform and get it together.
Right. Yeah. And so when you eventually did leave the military, did you have a plan for what was next and what you were going to be doing with your life, you know, after getting out of the military?
I did. So I had a skill bridge set up. I had a job. They said, we're going to move you to Arizona. They're building a facility out there. And I bet on black, so to say, right? Like, I was like, all right, I got everything ready to go. I got a job. They're going to help me out with housing. I just need to go to this internship. I'll be good. So I thought. And then one of the other interns showed up at my hotel room unannounced. And I was like, I'm not going to deal with this. Like, it reminded me too much of my military experience. And mm-hmm. The company essentially wanted me to just come back and pretend like nothing happened. And if you know anything about working with interns, everybody works together. You're in one room. And I was like, no, thank you. And most of the people were veterans. It was through a veteran program. That's typically how skill bridge is. And I was like, I've lived this life once. One time, I'm not going to do it again. Like, I kept my mouth closed for however long in the military. I'm not doing it again if I don't have to. And I asked if they had other locations and things like that. And they was like, no, just come back. And I was like, no, thank you. This isn't going to work for me. If you don't value your own company policy, the HR person was telling me that this is against company policy. Okay, so why are you still trying to force me to come back and be around this person? Mm-hmm. I don't think so. So I said, I'm trying to heal, not be hurt. So I just left, and then I just accepted, like, I don't know where life is going to take me. And now I'm applying for jobs and stuff like that and just still trying to heal. But I had a plan. Didn't go as planned, but I had a plan.
Yeah, and, you know, I've heard from other folks that it's a high number of people leaving the military, like a high percentage of people who leave the military who, within the first 2 years of leaving the military, they've gone from that first job, they're already into another job, mm-hmm. just within that first 2 years. Some people, even in that first year, they've already left that job. A lot of times it's just not a good fit, or, you know, it's not, the career isn't what they were expecting it to be, or the location, whatever it is, there's a whole number of issues. Sounds like your issue is probably more significant than what some other people are dealing with. But, you know, it is what it is, you know, for one reason or another. And it for some reason, it's just hard for a lot of veterans to find that first job and just nail it and land it and say, you know, this is a great job. This is what I'd love to do for the rest of my career. But yeah, you know, it doesn't always work out that way, you know?
I'll tell you, they were very like slow paced too. And I was like, what are we going to do today? And they was like, whatever comes. And I was like, what does that mean? You know? And I'm like, when you put me out by myself, what am I supposed to do? And they was like, whatever work comes up. And I was like, okay. I was like, all right.
So. That could be, That could be nothing, or that could be a whole lot of something, and you don't have any idea going into it. Like, what is today going to look like? We're going to have a busy day. I'm going to have a slow day. Who knows?
Yeah.
But yeah, that could be a little nerve wracking as well when you just don't know what's going on with any of that. So
yeah, and we only had like 2 months to really learn, like through the internship, what we were supposed to be doing. So I was like, so when I leave here and say something doesn't come up while I'm here, what's going to happen when I get out on my own? You know? So yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's going to be hard to cover every possible thing that comes up in that short a time period. But as far as your post-military life and you've gotten out and you're kind of, you know, living your life now, but as an Air Force veteran, do you still try to stay connected to the military community in any way through like veteran organizations or things like that? Or you kind of just put that history behind you?
No. If I can help it, the answer is no. The answer is no.
Okay.
I'm still fighting and navigating through some things right now. I'll tell you, I had a therapist mm-hmm. straight up tell me she was approached by agents. And in a different session, she said she was writing in favor of the government. And I'm still trying to get my records, correct my records, and things like that. Because I never really had that full-on opportunity to heal. You know, when you endure such a grave injustice, it's hard to heal when you don't have the answers. And this year, I said to myself, like, I'm going to let some things go. Like, if I can't get an answer to it, I'm just going to have to let it go. But there are certain things that I'm like, no, somebody's going to have to answer to this. And when you have people that are being held accountable and somebody undermines you like that, like, come on, you know? So if I can help it, I stay away from the agencies because in my eyes, that's just another extension of the government. And then they'll just get more people to kind of do their bidding and say whatever they need them to say. And I hate to think that way, but I have to, because when I wasn't thinking that way, it caught me by surprise. So I have to be prepared for whichever way the domino may fall. I don't want it to be that way, but
sure.
I'm not even going to put myself in that situation at this point.
So. Yeah. Yeah. And I know a lot of people who get out of the military, they still feel that connection to the military. They want to be part of something. They want to have that camaraderie or that sense of belonging. And so they join, you know, some of these organizations like the American Legion or VFW or, you know, those types of things. They try to get together with other veterans and it kind of helps them in that transition period. But then there's other people who are like, you know what, that was a totally different part of me. And I want to just put that piece behind me. And I just want to move on with the rest of my life. And there's no right or wrong, you know, answer to that, you know, it's different for everybody and everybody's reasons are going to be different and everything. And there's no, like I said, there's no right or wrong way to look at it. It's just how you approach it. And so, you know, in your case, it's a piece of your history that you want to kind of keep behind you. And, you know, you're still fighting through some of these things right now. So it's not like it's totally behind you, but it's not like you want to just go jump right back in and go hanging out with all these people too, you know?
Yeah.
So it's, and it makes sense. I totally get it.
My granddad asks me all the time. He's like, you go back, huh? I said, no.
No.
I'm ready to get a backpack and just travel the world. You know, that's what I want to do.
There you go. Yeah. So in your day-to-day life, you know, with the trauma and the everything that you've endured through your time in the military and all the, I guess the kind of injustice that took place with how this whole situation was handled. How do you find it in yourself to just keep moving on and continue to do the best you can with your day to day, whether it's work or, you know, family or other people that are in your life? How do you move forward and kind of not allow that to kind of take over all aspects of your life?
Good question. So I'm a bird's eye view kind of person. I look at the big picture and I always say to myself, if I let their actions change me, they win. If I stay stuck reminiscing on things, they win. If I get locked up and I go to jail, they win. You know what I mean? And so my objective is to not let them win, but also focus on what winning looks like to me. Who was Chelsea before the military? Who was Chelsea before all this stuff happened? What were my goals? What were my dreams? What did I want for myself? And going through the process, that's another thing that I would tell anybody that's listening and going through the same thing or something similar, whether it's the military, your job, whatever have you, what do you want out of the situation and be realistic? I can honestly say that I came in for education. I got my education before I left, right? I didn't think I was. Like, there were times where I was like, I don't know if I'm gonna make it. I think they're gonna put me out first. But I had to make that decision and say, no, this is something I wanted. I wanted to get my degree. Let me get my degree. Let me put forth the effort. Like, I had to wake up and take those classes, right? Because life doesn't stop because you're going through something. So there was a point in my life where everything stopped. Even I stopped and I was like, I don't ever want to feel this low again. So, and the irony of that is when people see me now, they're like, you look fine. And I'm like, I look fine, but I'm right where I need to be, you know? And like, for example, I was in therapy and they was like, well, you dress nice. And I was like, had you saw me 2 months ago, you would have wondered what's wrong with me, right? You know, or they're like, oh, you smell good. But 2 months ago, there was somebody else who met me when I wasn't smelling good, you know? So it's taking those baby steps, you know, and committing to yourself and understanding that I had to have this level of understanding that everybody that I come into contact with, they haven't seen my full journey. They haven't seen me before the trauma. There's people that see me before it. There's people that see me at the beginning. There's people that see me at the middle. There's people that see me towards the end. There's people that see me in the recovery process. And each person is going to have a different level of assessment. And I had to be okay with that because they haven't seen me throughout the whole thing. And at first I was like trying to prove, so to speak, was like, no, and over explaining. And then I was like, no, I'm done with that. You either get it or you don't. Not all wounds are visible. And if I decide that I'm going to put this in a box and close it and never talk about it again, so be it. You know?
Yeah.
And some people just have to accept that. So I think for me, I had to realize, last thing I was going to say, not to cut you off, is that when it comes to the family aspect, there were some parts of me that were like, I don't want to drag them into what I have going on. So I pushed a lot of people away. Then when I needed support, I was looking for people and I couldn't find them because I pushed them away partially, right? And I just said to myself, who do I want to be, right? Do I want to be the miserable person? Do I want to be this person? Or do I want to be that person that shows up? Do I want to be that person where people can be inspired by? Do I want to be the person that, you know, you hear about in the history books, like, you went through all that, you know, and well, dang, well, maybe I can get through what I got going on, you know? So I decided that's who I wanted to be. And when it comes to, like, family and stuff, you know, like, it's cliche, but it's like everything ain't for everybody, you know? So, and that's pretty much it. Do what you can. Don't fake it. I would encourage you not to fake it. Show up as you are so people can help you where you are. And that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, what you just said, you know, trying to be an inspiration to other people, trying to share your story and let other people know that they're not alone and that, you know, that's what this show's all about. And it's trying to let folks out there who might be just suffering in silence and saying to themselves that it's just me. Nobody else knows what I'm going through. Well, you know, here's an example that there's somebody else who might have gone through something like this. And yeah, you know what some of these other folks have gone through. You know how bad it feels to not be taken seriously or even taken seriously, but just nothing is being done about it. And or whatever the case might be, it sucks. And it makes people feel like they can't trust anybody and they don't want to talk to anybody. They just want to push everybody away. And, you know, here's somebody who knows what those folks are going through. And there are people that you can talk to. There are people who know, you know, what's going on with all this. So you don't have to go through any of this alone. And whatever it is for you, whether it's a situation like what you described or it's something else, there are other people out there who have experienced those things, and you don't have to go through it alone. And you can reach out for help. And it's not a sign of weakness. As a matter of fact, it's a sign of strength to be able to ask for help. And if you think about it, you know, what in the military did we ever do that wasn't as a group or as a team or in like battle buddy pairs, at least, you know, at minimum, you know, pretty much everything was done with somebody else. Why not take that mindset and apply that to, you know, everything else in life? So, you know, I'm glad that you came on and were open and honest to share your story and be that inspiration, be that hope for some other folks who might be going through something similar. It's not the easiest thing to come on a show and share, you know, it's kind of the dark point parts of your life. But, you know, if, like you said, as long as it's able to help some folks, that then you're willing to do it. And that's great. And so I appreciate you coming on and sharing all this. Before we wrap up, though, do you have any like kind of last messages or, in, you know, words of encouragement for anybody before we wrap up?
Absolutely. I'm going to say, which is my favorite saying, this is what I would say to myself. I would say, like, give them hell, you know, and ammo. You know, we have our little saying, you know, it's like, give them the guns, right? And it's like, give them hell with the guns. So give them hell, you know, like, if somebody wrongs you, in general, it's perfectly okay to be upset about it. You know, in the military, they train us, and I think this was a big part of what took me so long to, like, get it through my head, what was going on. They train us to just be okay with certain things, pick up and move on, right? Mm-hmm. But you have to understand, when you're not at 100%, I say this all the time, if you're not 100%, don't come here trying to give me 50, don't give me 47, don't give me 63. Take the leave, because this person's on leave all the time. You don't know why they're on leave all the time. It's probably best that they're on leave all the time, right? Take the leave, take the vacation, life is going to go on. You know what I mean? And it's going to suck in the moment, yeah. But remember, it's only for a season. And when you come out of those tears, when you come out of that somber, forgive yourself, because this is probably your first rodeo. That's something I had to do, right? I always been on a straight, narrow path. I've never gotten any kind of crazy trouble or anything like that. Speeding tickets. Okay. You know, but I've never dealt with, like, law enforcement, anything like what I dealt with in the military. So I had to really forgive myself, because there was a lot of things that I just did not know, because I didn't have the life experience. And that's okay. Yeah. Now I do know. And life goes on. So if you're listening, if you're in that sunken place, just know that you're there now. It's for the experience. And then you decide how you want to deal with it. And whatever's best for you, it's what's best for you, because people can't tell you anything of how to handle your situation if they've never been in your shoes or in that situation themselves.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you again, Chelsea, for coming on and sharing your story and for those last kind of words of encouragement and everything. So thank you again, and really do appreciate you coming on.
Thank you.